From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, satirists Bill Maher and Colin Quinn talk about the presidential campaign, the conventions, and the new terrorism alert. They each voted for Nader in 2000. This year, Maher is voting for Kerry. Quinn plans to vote for Bush. Maher's HBO series Real Time with Bill Maher just began a new season. Quinn's Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn is shown on Comedy Central. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer. President Bush was in Dallas today. The president spoke to the Knights of Columbus about faith-based initiatives. NPR's Don Gagne is traveling with the president. He says Mr. Bush is trying to reach out to Catholic voters.
He talked about abortion and protecting the sanctity of marriage and about his faith-based initiative. He comes here looking for votes. He certainly was very popular with this crowd, but he hopes this sends a message to Catholics around the country as well. He would like to improve the percentage of Catholic votes that Republicans get, that he gets specifically.
NPR's Don Gagne. The Democratic presidential nominee, John Kerry, was campaigning today in Wisconsin. NPR's Scott Horsley is covering the Kerry campaign.
John Kerry's bus tour is continuing through the industrial Midwest. He's in Wisconsin today, a state that lost a lot of manufacturing jobs during the economic downturn. Wisconsin is an important state for the Democrats. It's one that Al Gore carried by a very narrow margin, in fact, less than 1% 4 years ago. From Wisconsin, the Kerry bus tour rolls into Iowa, and then over the next several days, he'll make his way down to Missouri, another central U.S. swing state.
NPR's Scott Horsley. Former Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean says the Bush administration's decision Sunday to tighten security at financial institutions was politically motivated. The alert was based on intelligence that was as much as 4 years old. The terror alert occurred right after the Democratic National Convention. But Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge says the danger is real. He says Al-Qaeda plans terror attacks years in advance. Ridge added that, quote, "We don't do politics in the Department of Homeland Security." The terror alert in Washington led to the closure of a major street today near the Capitol building, upsetting local officials. From member station WAMU, Jack Zahora reports.
The closing of First Street, which runs parallel to the Capitol building, angered D.C. Mayor Anthony Williams and Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents the district. Norton said although the mayor raised the city's terror alert to orange, Capitol Police's move to close the heavily traveled road should only have been done as a last resort.
Residents accustomed to access may have emergencies, not be able to get through, and not know how to get to where they have to get. You just don't do that.
The Capitol Police Department didn't confer with the city to close the street, and local police say the road closure chokes off the already congested area. In the meantime, Capitol Police say they're open to discussing alternative plans. From NPR News, I'm Jack Zahora in Washington.
On Wall Street today, the Dow lost nearly 59 points to close at 10,120 in active trading. The Nasdaq fell 32 points to close at 1859. The S&P 500 lost nearly 7 points to close at 1099. This is NPR. Oil prices hit new highs today above $44 a barrel. Prices rose after the head of OPEC said the oil cartel can't do much to bring prices down because it's already pumping at near capacity. Oil prices are up by almost a third since the end of 2003. Franklin Advisors will pay its investors $50 million as part of a fraud settlement with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The fund company was charged with using improper market timing techniques that cheated customers. Jason Lopez has more from San Francisco.
The SEC has been focusing on the way fund companies handle client money, though Franklin Resources, the parent firm to Franklin Advisors, didn't admit to any wrongdoing. The company agreed to settle the SEC's civil fraud charges by changing some investment policies and repaying customers. Franklin is accused of improper trading from 1996 to 2001. Like many fund firms that have already settled with the SEC over the past year, Franklin had allowed its traders to engage in market timing. That's a risky, though not illegal, practice of quickly moving large amounts of money in and out of the market and can result in losses for long-term investors. Trouble is, Franklin didn't accurately disclose its trading practices to its customers. For NPR News, I'm Jason Lopez in San Francisco.
Halliburton will pay a $7.5 million fine to settle SEC charges that it misled investors by not disclosing a 1998 accounting change at a time when Vice President Dick Cheney was CEO of the company. The Securities and Exchange Commission says it did not charge Cheney in the case. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, online at hewlett.org.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is one of America's most outspoken and controversial political satirists, Bill Maher. His HBO series, Real Time, started its new season last Friday, just in time to weigh in on the Democratic Convention. Real Time usually starts with a sketch or song parody. Then Maher talks about the issues of the day with a panel of guests from the worlds of politics, policy, punditry, and entertainment. Maher started his HBO series after the demise of his ABC series, Politically Incorrect. One of Maher's guests on Friday was Michael Moore. They both voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, but this time they're voting for Kerry and trying to convince Nader to withdraw from the ballot. Nader joined them briefly on Friday's show and defended his campaign. Here's a clip from the show.
The important thing here, Bill, is this. The conservatives and liberal Republicans are furious with Bush over the deficit, over the subsidies to corporations from their tax dollars, over the Patriot Act, big government, over the sovereignty shredding WTO and NAFTA. Who's talking to them? You know, the Democrats are so arrogant. Just because tens of millions of voters, just because tens of millions of voters in this country, working people, are against abortion and against gun control, that means they write them off completely. This is ridiculous.
Okay.
We are the underdog candidates.
Look, obviously, we are not convincing you with any of our words, so I'm just going to say, because of all your great service, and because we do really love you, but we disagree with you on this, Michael and I are going to get down on our knees and beg you not to run.
This is an excerpt of Friday night's edition of Real Time with Bill Maher. Bill Maher, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
How did you and Michael Moore decide to get down on your knees and beg Ralph Nader not to run?
I just said to Mike before the show, you know, neither one of us is above begging. you know, I said, Mike, come on, you're not above begging, you're married. Joking, of course. But I said, you know, it's the least we could do for our country. We both feel very strongly about this. We've tried everything else. Everybody has tried everything else. At very least, even if he doesn't withdraw from the race, we'll know that we gave it our full measure to try to affect this election. And, you know, having done that, I think I can at least walk through the voting booth on November 2nd with a clear conscience, knowing I tried.
Now, I'd say that the look on his face was a combination of surprise, shock, and terror. How did you read it?
Well, just to get any look on Ralph Nader's face is good. I think he was a little... I think he was okay with that. He was a little more miffed when I gave him the picture of O.J. Simpson and said, this is to remind you that a person can be considered a hero his whole life and then wreck it because of one little thing.
Now, let's see how effective your entreaty was. Ralph Nader has since said that the Democratic Convention made John Kerry sound more like President Bush than ever, and that justifies his staying in the race. And he called the Democrats a decadent party. So I guess goal number one of getting him to withdraw was not fulfilled.
No. But I think we did achieve something I thought that was pretty interesting that could be a wedge on this issue in the future. I asked Ralph, I said, okay, we get it that you don't think that Bush is different enough from John Kerry. What about if he was running against David Duke, former Klansman, somebody who's been in the political realm? And Ralph said, no, in that case, I would vote for John Kerry. So, in other words, it is a matter of degree. Ralph Nader can be moved. He does understand the concept of the lesser of two evils. Apparently, President Bush is just not quite evil enough.
So to recap, 2000, you voted for Nader. 2004, mm-hmm. you're urging people to not vote for Nader. You're urging Nader to withdraw from the ballot. What impact do you think he's going to actually have on the election this time around?
I wish I could answer that. I had been saying, and because I believed it to be true, of course, that he wouldn't have that big an effect on the election, because I think it's erroneous assumption people make that a third-party candidate is always going to take votes away from somebody. And the analogy I used was television. Very often they'll throw against a very popular television show a new show, and it won't be that the old show loses an audience, it's just that the new show brings in a whole new audience. You know, CSI still gets its 20 million, but How to Marry a Midget, you know, just brings in the midget audience, whatever. And I thought maybe that's the truth with Ralph, and I think that is somewhat the truth with Ralph. But then you look at the polls. Now, Ralph, of course, is saying that the polls don't mean anything, but that's always what politicians say when they're behind in the polls. But it's not worth the risk. So my guess is still that the people who are voting for Nader wouldn't be voting anyway. But even if he just takes, you know, a few hundred, we saw from the last time, that's enough to tip the election. So for those of us who think that the stewardship of the current president has not been effective, we just wish Ralph would play it safe and leave the election a little more pristine this time.
Bill Maher is my guest, and his HBO series Real Time with Bill Maher resumed last Friday night and continues through the election. Because of the new terror alert against financial institutions in New York, New Jersey, and Washington, we're seeing pictures now of police with automatic weapons in the street. And, of course, if you live in New York, you're actually seeing the police with the automatic weapons. You're not just seeing the photos. What's your reaction to seeing that?
If I lived in New York, I'd be somewhat assured. Mm-hmm. At least they're on the case. I mean, if there's a problem, let's deal with it. Let's have the cops with the automatic weapons or whatever it takes in the street. Better to deal with the problem as it is than to pretend there isn't a problem.
Have you asked yourself if you worked, say, for Citibank, if you'd be showing up for work?
If I worked for Citibank, I'd never be showing up for work. It would have nothing to do with terrorism.
But seriously, say you worked in one of those places or right next door to one of the places that is a likely target. Do you think you'd go to work?
I think I would. I mean, I think that's the least I can do. I was born at a time when the Vietnam War, I wasn't born then, but I came of age, shall we say, just as the Vietnam War was ending. So there was never any moment in my life when I had to consider, oh, should I join up and go fight the war? Because I think I was 17 in 73 when they stopped the draft and started to pull the troops home. So I got real lucky with that. So I would think the least I could do for my country in the way of showing courage is to show up for work. And I think once they're on to a situation to this degree, it would be very hard for the terrorists to pull this off. I mean, they got us good on September 11th, and they could get us again. But in a situation like this where they have what seems like specific intel, I would put my lot in with the good guys.
Now, I know you're voting for Kerry and you're not voting for Nader this time. Do you consider yourself, like, pro-Kerry or just anti-Bush?
Well, I think John Kerry is a fine candidate. There's nothing. People's expectations of a presidential candidate are so silly at this point. I think the Kerry campaign is a good test of our maturity. Because the knocks on Kerry besides the flip-flopper issue, which we got into our show Friday, and I could address here if you'd want me to. But outside of that, it just seems like all the knocks on him are is that he's not exciting enough, he's not charismatic enough. And these are not qualities that we should even care about in a president. I don't think if Abraham Lincoln was running today, he'd be particularly good-looking, charismatic. I don't know if he told a great joke. I don't know if he would strike the people as President Bush does, as someone who you'd want to have over for dinner. But that's not what's important. What's important is that the man is a capable leader of the free world. And John Kerry is a very serious guy. I like that quality in him, that he's serious. I don't care if he's funny or likable or witty or
did you feel like that's your job and not his job?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a nice added quality in a president. It was wonderful that, you know, John Kennedy spoiled all of us for presidents in the future because he was so charismatic and handsome and witty. But you know what? That was a fluke. Get over it. And it's probably never going to happen again that way. So we should stop electing the president like he's winning American Idol and elect him and choose him for the qualities that are necessary in this dangerous world, which is primarily wisdom and courage.
Do you think that there's too much emphasis on his military record, you know, in the sense that do you feel like in future elections the military record of the candidates will be important, or do you think that there's something special about this election and his record?
I think military service is always extremely important and special. I voted for Dole in 96 because I thought, well, you know what? He's going to lose anyway. And I felt a special attachment because my parents were both in World War II for that generation that fought that war. And I thought, this is the last time I'm going to have to, chance I'm going to have to vote for a World War II veteran. And I just think all things being equal, I've said this before, that all things being equal in two candidates, I think just on past service, you give it to the guy who went to war for his country. That's the biggest, by far, sacrifice that anybody could ever make for their country. And obviously there are situations where one candidate has been to war and he's just not good at politics. You don't elect that guy. But that's not the case with John Kerry. And also, we are in a war, and if we are going to need, quote, a wartime president, then I want a president who's been to war. I think that makes a huge difference in how a president acts. I think when a president has seen war and been to war, he is much less likely to involve his country in a war. And I also think the level of naivete that our current president displays in matters of foreign affairs is something that a veteran would never have, because a veteran has been overseas. A veteran has seen what it's like to conquer a country. Any Vietnam vet knows that one of our biggest problems in Vietnam was that we just didn't understand the people and the culture that we were dealing with, and we're doing the same thing in Iraq. I think if you asked the average Iraqi man on the street, would you rather have Saddam Hussein back in power or have your sister walk down this street in a miniskirt? I think they would overwhelmingly say, I'd rather have Saddam Hussein back in power. And I don't think President Bush gets that.
My guest is political satirist Bill Maher. His HBO series, Real Time, started its new season last Friday. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bill Maher is my guest, and his HBO Friday night series, Real Time with Bill Maher, just resumed this past Friday, and it will continue through the election and then go on a break again. After the Democratic convention, you said that you were exhausted by the optimism.
Yes, exactly.
What did you find too much about the optimism at the convention?
That it was never ending, that they shoved it down our throat from the first minute to the last, that it's childish even to presume that optimism is, for some reason, the most important quality in a candidate. I tried to make the point on the show Friday that pessimism is actually good, and that the U.S. Constitution is a very pessimistic document. That's why it has all those checks and balances, because they didn't trust each other, and they certainly didn't trust what they would have called the howling masses. It was all about making sure that human nature was checked. And there's something wrong with optimism to a degree, but I'd rather have realism. You know, I feel almost like there's a committee waiting. Are you now, or have you ever been a pessimist?
So what networks did you watch for the convention?
I switched around. I mean, the broadcast networks didn't really put it on, so I was watching probably CNN and MSNBC.
Not Fox? Not C-SPAN?
not C-SPAN. I'm not sure where C-SPAN is in my satellite package. I may have saved a few dollars and didn't get C-SPAN. That's right. I got Cinemax instead. But the other networks, even the cable networks, didn't show the full convention. And I was insulted on behalf of the Reverend Al Sharpton the way MSNBC, I don't know, CNN may have done the same thing. No, they didn't, because I think I saw it there. I saw the whole speech on CNN. But MSNBC definitely cut him off. He was building to this incredible moment. It was literally the only political speech that has ever brought me to tears. And the next day I found out that right in the middle of it, as he's going, you know, for the home run swing at the end of his speech, MSNBC, all right, we're watching the Reverend Al Sharpton, and I have to say, this man started out his career with a lie. And, you know, it's just like the unbelievable narcissism of the media. Yeah, we're watching. In other words, you're watching me and I'm watching him, but what's important is that you're watching me. So you're right, I should have been watching C-SPAN.
You wrote a very funny editorial about this for the LA Times and also talked about it on your show. When you said, would you say that the speeches, that the conventions were just taking away time from the network's real goal in life, which is covering the Lacey Peterson trial?
Yes, right. Yes, I took the position, I guess it's a contrary one, that the conventions are actually important and that they deserve to be not just broadcast, but viewed in their entirety. It's one of the few times during the election cycle when the race is not reduced to just sound bites and attack ads. Now, conventions aren't perfect, but at least it's a way that the major figures in a party can speak in an uninterrupted fashion, in a serious fashion, and people can hear what they have to say. And the parties are different this year. They do have different platforms and visions of America. So is it so awful for Americans to take a few nights out of their year to look at the party and then the other party, see who they consider their important faces, see what they consider their important themes, and hear what their vision is for their country, for your country? It is your country. As opposed to what? Watching some awful reruns that the networks are burning off during the summer?
Bill, what do you think of the music at the Democratic Convention?
Well, I'm a big Chaka Khan fan, so, you know, I'm a Republican Party convention music fan, because they always have, I think, a lot more soulful music, because they're attempting to persuade people that there are more than five black people in the Republican Party. So they've always got a great R&B lineup. The Democrats, of course, are trying to appeal to the heartland. So they try to put on people who are, you know, quite frankly, a little too white bread for my taste.
What are you looking forward to? What are your expectations of the Republican convention?
Well, I think the Republican convention has a lot of work to do to accomplish its goal, which is to once again fool the American people into thinking that it's a party of moderates. That's why they're putting up people like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rudy Giuliani, who are not really emblematic of that party. Now, the The Republican Party always likes to say it has a big tent, but whenever I've been under that big tent, the people serving the hors d'oeuvres were always black and brown. I'm just saying. but at their conventions, Schwarzenegger, you know, Giuliani, all their, you know, the few people who they have in their party who are a little more sensible about social issues, they seem to have a prominent role. You seem to see an awful lot of ethnic faces. And, you know, President Bush ran in 2000 as a compassionate conservative and as a moderate. And now after 4 years, obviously he can't hide the record that he didn't govern that way. So it's a much taller order this time trying to convince people. But, of course, as I've said before, the genius of our marketing combined with the stupidity of our people is the true axis of evil.
I want to ask you a language question. Now, you're on HBO where you can say anything. And do. Two big language controversies in politics recently. Teresa Hines-Carey told a reporter to shove it. And Vice President Dick Cheney told, was it a congressman or a senator?
Pat Leahy.
Senator Pat Leahy. And Vice President Cheney told him to blank himself.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I want to hear this. I want to hear you say it.
Some other time. So did the fact that Vice President Cheney used the expletive and told Pat Leahy to blank himself, or that Teresa Hines told a reporter to shove it, register on you in any way?
It certainly doesn't bother me. I think you have to look a little bit deeper than those two comments. First of all, just by virtue of the fact that you can quote Teresa Hines-Carey's comment and you can't quote the vice president's, should tell you that there's a little difference in who's the meaner. Also, to tell a reporter who, in her view, I haven't really looked into it, but apparently, in her view anyway, he made stuff up about her. I mean, come on, what's the big deal about telling a reporter to shove it if they lied about you? That's the least you can do. That's a lot different than talking in a much more tawdry way to a U.S. senator. This wasn't some low-life reporter working for that Richard Mellon Scaife scoundrel. This was Senator Pat Leahy. And on the Senate floor, I understand, which has always been a place of courtesy. And it's pretty funny because this is the crowd that was going to come into office and restore civility, remember, and honor and integrity and all that kind of stuff. I mean, having said that, it's about the thousandth thing on my list to have against Dick Cheney. I mean, I could think of so many other things that he has done while in office that bother me more. But it just, I think, is very indicative of the nature of these people.
Bill Maher, his HBO series Real Time started its new season last Friday and continues Friday nights through the election. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, publishers of Portable Professor, a new series of university-quality courses on compact disc, available at Barnes & Noble stores and online at bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Dial Press, publisher of The Rule of Four, a debut suspense novel of the puzzling connection between an ancient manuscript and an Ivy League murder by Ian Caldwell and Dustin Thomason. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, Hollywood and politics. We continue our conversation with satirist Bill Maher, who lives in L.A., and we talk with satirist Colin Quinn, who's in New York City. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with political satirist Bill Maher. His HBO series, Real Time with Bill Maher, started its new season last Friday. Bill Maher, you live in Los Angeles, so you know you're in the Hollywood area. Hollywood is has been called by many conservatives, you know, a kind of elite, liberal bastion. Of course, Governor Schwarzenegger.
That's what I like about it.
So, as a comic and satirist who lives in Los Angeles, has her own TV show, you know, is voting for Kerry, you know, doesn't like Bush. What are your impressions of Hollywood as a liberal bastion? Do you think that that's true? Do you think that you are typical?
Well, Hollywood is a liberal bastion only on the surface. They are truly limousine liberals. They're the people who are giving money to the candidates and so forth. They're rich, okay? And rich people tend to be conservative. And they're a lot more conservative here in many ways than you would think. Yes, they, of course, are liberal on social issues. They want abortion to remain legal. They want to be able to have gay marriages and stuff like that. But rich people really also would like the stock market to be stable. And even though they cry a lot about how President Bush gave a tax cut to the rich, you know, I think secretly they're kind of happy he did that.
So you don't think Hollywood's as liberal as advertised?
No, I don't.
No, your show, Politically Incorrect, kind of created a trend of programs in which comics and actors sat around and talked about politics.
Yeah, I think it's funny now that so many other people are doing it, and I've left it.
why have you left it, and do you feel like you created a monster?
I do, and I feel bad about it, and I should feel bad about it. It is a bit of a monster. Just the idea that all sorts of celebrities have this sort of half-life, that they can go on and opine about various matters. And even reality television is a lot about that. It's about celebrities who are still famous in people's minds. They still go, oh, wow, Adam West, you know, William Shatner, it's good to see him again. How can we use them? How can we use people that the public doesn't see anymore but kind of gets a smile from seeing once again? And so in some ways it's okay. I personally felt like we outgrew that method of entertaining the American audience, which is not to say that, you know, I quit Politically Incorrect because I was tired of it. I plainly was fired because of something I said. But it did come at a good time because I kind of felt like that era and that phase of my career was drawing to a close. I was not as interested anymore in talking to intellectually shallow celebrities about important issues and having to paper over the fact that they didn't know what they were talking about half the time. It was charming, I think, for a while. It was kind of new and funny. Oh, look at that. He doesn't know, and the other guy's a real heavyweight, and here it is, our democracy, and we can see them in action together. But after a while, I was enjoying it less. I never enjoyed Politically Incorrect so much as the last 9 months after 9/11, when everyone in entertainment field kind of had to get serious for a while. And we got more serious. We didn't start the show with a monologue. We just had the panel there. And the panel was almost always after that much more serious people. We had a lot of Muslim Americans on to explain their side of it. And we sort of dispensed with that, silly, Pauly Shore kind of guest. And I love Pauly, but, you know, he doesn't belong there talking about important issues.
So what's your criteria for guests now?
Now it's a whole different ballgame. They have to know what they're talking about. They have to be involved in a serious way. Like the show we had Friday, Michael Moore, obviously there's a guy who takes it seriously. Kim Campbell, the former Prime Minister of Canada, and a sitting congressman, Representative David Dreyer. And these are all serious people who can address whatever issue comes up. In the old show, we had to always have meetings where we would go, okay, now I'd like to talk about the situation in Israel, but we have Pam Anderson on the show this week, and really the only issue that she wants to talk about or would be good on is animal rights. So, you know, we're going to have to do Israel on Wednesday because... So, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. I can talk. I never have that meeting at all. We never even discuss it. I talk about what I want to talk about, what went on that week and what's important. And everybody on the panel, it is just assumed, can talk about whatever issue comes up, and they can.
Do you think that comics and political satirists like yourself, Jon Stewart, Colin Quinn, Al Franken, are going to have an impact on the election?
Yes, I do. Because, as has been widely reported, a good deal of Americans, especially younger Americans, get their information from these shows, especially the other fellows you mentioned who are on every night, and they've become a habit to people, and people love those shows, and they go by what they hear on those shows. So the point of view, to the degree that those shows bring a point of view, is the one that people adapt because people are looking for an opinion.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing that people are getting their
thing.
Opinions from comics
thing.
And satirists?
Uh-huh. Because people form opinions based on not enough information to really have an opinion. They want to have an opinion, they just don't want to do the work that it takes to have an opinion. So they will adopt the Leno opinion or the Jon Stewart opinion. And or what they perceive as the opinion there, and that sort of is an incestuous situation because I think the comics take their opinion from what they perceive to be the public opinion. So I don't know if we ever really look beyond very surface impressions of an issue. You know, if John Kerry is if you can get a laugh portraying John Kerry as a flip-flopper, that's as deep as it goes, and then that's all that's important. He's a flip-flopper, and there we get our joke. And then the public, you know, that's just what they believe. They have that opinion. Okay, John Kerry's a flip-flopper. That's one thing I know about politics. How do I know that? Well, they're always making jokes about it, and everybody's always laughing. It's got to be true. Whereas, is it really true? I don't know.
You know, as a comic yourself, how do you feel when, you know, Al Gore goes on Saturday Night Live or John McCain? Do you think that's a good thing in that, you know, it kind of humanizes the candidate or the politician and shows us another side of who they are? Or do you think that that should be safe for the actors?
Yes, I think it's terrible. I think it's, again, they're contributing to the problem. And the problem is that people don't vote a candidate into office for the right reasons. The right reasons would be, is he brave? Is he strong? Is he wise? Okay, that's not what they care about. They care about, how does he feel about me? What's he like? It's not what does he think, it's what does he feel. It's almost like in the Olympics, you know, they used to just show the athletics, and now we always have to have a sort of a frosted lens backstory so that we know who to root for. Oh, root for the runner from Kenya whose sister has multiple sclerosis. You know, it's like that's not really what this is about or what's important. And so when these guys go on shows like that, it doesn't make me like them more. It makes me like them less because they're pandering at a level that does not increase the motivation for the voters to consider what's really important about a guy.
So, Bill, who's on your show this Friday?
Terry, I'm glad you asked me that. I have it right in front of me. It's Steve Harvey. Love Steve Harvey. Former Representative Bob Barr. I think we all remember him from impeachment. And movie star Tim Robbins.
Wait, now Steve Harvey's a comic, right?
Steve, yes.
Didn't you just tell me
Steve
that
Harvey is a very popular African-American comic and radio host.
But didn't you just tell me you didn't like so much talking to entertainment people?
If they're stupid.
And Tim Robbins is an actor.
I promise you, these guys know what's going on.
Okay.
I wouldn't book them if they didn't, yes. I mean, all those years that we did Politically Incorrect, we kept files, many of them in my own little mind, about who knew what was up and who didn't. So, yes. I mean, Tim Robbins, I think, is rather well known for being an activist.
Yes. And you're going to do a sketch at the beginning or a song?
We always do a little
not like
a little
your songs.
Song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants. We always do a, what we call a cold open. Yes, something a little amusing, little sketch play.
Did you ever want to act? Did you ever think about that?
Well, darling, I actually was an actor for many years and was in
Funny,
many
I didn't see you in anything.
Well, you probably did and you probably don't remember.
Oh, what were you in?
I had four television series.
As an actor?
This is in the 80s. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, what shows?
My first series was called Sarah with Gina Davis and Bronson Pinchot and Alfre Woodard. I did a series called Hard Knocks. I did one called Charlie Hoover. I was always in episodic television, you know, Murder, She Wrote and Max Headrooms and whatever the shows were at the time. Movies, Never One That Was Like a Huge Hit. But, that's how, I mean, I came out to California in 1983 and I started Politically Incorrect in 1993. But most of the time in between that 80s, early 90s era, I was a comedian and an actor. I mean, that's how I made my living.
Would you go back to acting?
Never. A few years ago, somebody asked me if I would do one day on a picture, and I thought, well, I haven't done this in a long time. Why don't I do this just to see if it's any fun like I used to think it was fun? And it was a nightmare. It was, too many hours, too much makeup caked onto my face, too early in the morning, and as was my wont when I was an actor, the movie was horrible. I never seemed to be able to get into a project that was any good. That you wouldn't even want to walk out of the theater. So I think I've resigned that. And also, I think my nature is completely opposite of what the acting nature is. The actor is always trying to put on an illusion and conceal the truth or build an alternate truth, whereas really my nature is the exact opposite. I'm always trying to just say exactly what is the truth as I see it.
Right. You want to say exactly what you think.
Yeah.
Well, Bill Maher, thank you so much
without getting fired.
Well, too late for that, huh?
Knock wood this time.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Pleasure always, Terry. Thank you.
Bill Maher's HBO series Real Time started its new season last Friday and continues Friday nights through the election. Coming up, political satirist Colin Quinn, host of the Comedy Central series Tough Crowd. This is Fresh Air. Colin Quinn is a political satirist who first became known for anchoring Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live. Now he comments on the headlines on his Comedy Central program, Tough Crowd. On each edition, Quinn leads a conversation with other comics about the issues of the day. It's broadcast Monday through Thursday nights, right after The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Before we talk about the presidential campaign, here's a clip from last night's edition of Tough Crowd.
Does Jon's Security Service in Vietnam make him a better presidential candidate than George Bush?
Well, you know what? Why don't they I wish they would stop focusing on these kind of tangential issues like, you know, who served in Vietnam or who was a chicken deserter, you know? And I wish they would just focus on what matters. I wish they'd focus on what matters, real issues that matter to Americans, like who's got the bitchiest wife or, you know, who smoked pot or, you know, all these things matter.
And they didn't, by the way, they did not, he fought in Vietnam, but they keep leaving out that he didn't actually fight. They just propped him up like a scarecrow to frighten the North Vietnamese.
We call Colin Quinn at home in New York. Now, you're voting for Bush in this election, yes?
So far I am.
Oh, so you're not completely sure?
Well, I'm not voting for Kerry, but I'm voting for Bush. I mean, last time I voted for Nader. That's the kind of hipster I am. I could vote for anybody. But, I mean, right now I'd vote for Bush.
Tell me why.
Because I just feel like I don't know what else he was supposed to do after 9/11 than to, you know, take, like, an offensive move. I just don't understand that I don't understand why Iraq was so wrong yet. People keep telling me how it was the worst possible move and it's a mess. But it's like, you know, the mess didn't start with just us preemptively striking. 9/11 was kind of a thing that had to be reacted to, you know. So, I mean, I'm not saying that there wasn't another probably better way. Yes, if he'd known what Iraq was like, we could have done a better job cleaning it up. But I look at it, I mean, both sides make, you could look at it either way. You could say, well, if we didn't have Republicans with their corporate connections to Saudi royals and corrupt governments, these people wouldn't have had uprising and 9/11 wouldn't have happened, and that makes sense. But you also could say, well, if we hadn't have been politically correct and made the CIA not capable of doing anything in other countries and dealing with, you know, the people that can give us information who would, you know, have to be kind of, you know, shady people, 9/11 wouldn't have happened, and that makes sense. So it's kind of hard for me to really get on any team as far as, you know, I can't get into the righteous indignation of either side. It's tough for me.
What were your thoughts on the Democratic Convention? You watched it?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think was like a high point and a low point?
I thought the low point was the fact that while I was listening to Sharpton speak, and watching all the white people melt and applaud every 2 seconds over his demagoguery and his, you know, just everything he said was so vague, from his immigration points, which made no sense, to his, his accusations of, like, you know, it just seems to me like he got up there and gave that typical, which I know from stand-up, there's stand-up comics that can work the room. All he did was work the room, and if it had been like, I was just imagining the whole time, if it was like a Jerry Falwell or one of those right-wing Christians, how people would have said, oh, my God. You know, he's really a demagogue. He's saying, no, you know, he's just vague, accusatory, you know, hate speech. And yet everybody went, Al Sharpton was brilliant. That bugged me. And, you know, I thought Kerry gave a good speech. But again, it's like, is that really going to happen on a Democratic or Republican watch where the rich stop getting privilege and the poor people get the breaks? It's like, you know, the world has not really changed enough. If anybody could do what Kerry said he could do in that speech, of course, how could you not elect them? But nobody does that, and nobody ever has, because it's systematically impossible. And the world, you know, just doesn't allow for it unless we can floor the human, you know, all the human qualities like greed and stuff. I mean, it's good that you're trying to perfect a society, but suddenly John Kerry wakes up at whatever age he is, and he's outraged when he gets on there. You people are being, like, suddenly he's outraged now. You know, where was he the rest of his life, you know? I mean, but, so, I mean, I don't believe any of these things are that, I don't believe people are that hot and bothered about it. That's why Ralph Nader is the one I kind of always believe, because at least he's been outraged since I've heard of him. He's always been the same. He's always like, you're getting screwed. These other people just jump in during election time, and they're like, you're getting screwed. You know what I mean? And they just, both sides just go to the American people. You people, the American people are not going to fall for this. And it's like, ugh, you know, I don't like this kind of sincerity.
Yeah, as a comic, were there any like laugh lines that you thought actually worked during the Democratic Convention, and were there any that you thought really failed and that you you maybe would have liked to work on?
Well, even despite what I said about Sharpton, he does have the funniest delivery, you know. Like, he, when he says something for a laugh, he gets his laugh, you know. But I mean, like, you know, like, I feel this way about Bush, and I feel this way about Kerry. I feel like whoever writes for them should be ashamed of themselves, because Kerry's slogan was, first it was bring it on, and then on this one it was America can do better. It's like, come on, you know, can you give them a better slogan than that? It's really horrible. It's corny, you know? They're holding up America can do better and the part two of that thing, and it's like, you know, who's writing this stuff for these people?
Now, you said that you had voted for Ralph Nader in the 2000 election.
I did.
How come you're not voting for Nader this year?
I'm not so sure. I'm not.
Oh. Why would you vote for him?
Why would I vote for him?
Uh-huh.
Just because I'm outraged that people are so mad. That it's like so funny, because like in fascism you have one person that is your choice. It's so horrible. Dictatorships, you only have one person. And here you have two. One more than fascism. So it's like, you know, that's not good either. So I just hate the fact that everybody's like, hey, we can't have three parties spoiling things. You know, I mean, I understand. but that it's close calls, but it's like I wish there was more than just two candidates all the time, you know, because sometimes I feel like what I agree with as far as my, you know, my policy agreements run on both sides, like I'm pro-choice and I'm pro-death penalty. So, like, that's a good example of being, you know, the Democrats would never say pro-death penalty and the Republicans would never say pro-choice, really, you know.
What are your expectations of the Republican convention and what would you like to see happen there?
At the Republican convention?
Yeah.
I just want them to not, you know, totally make me feel like, ugh, I spoke out that I was on your side. I just don't want them to embarrass me with some awful music from, like, you know, I don't know what kind of music they come up with, but it could be pretty horrific. Or just some, you know, I just hope they get a good speaker. One person that gets up there and kind of, you know, has some clarity, you know, maybe a little bit hip. Is that too much to ask?
My guest is political satirist Colin Quinn, host of the Comedy Central series Tough Crowd. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is political satirist Colin Quinn, host of the Comedy Central series Tough Crowd. He's a former anchor of Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update. Now, you know, a lot of conservatives are very anti-Hollywood, and I know you live in New York and not L.A., but you're still part of the show business family. So Hollywood is perceived as very liberal. Being a part of the entertainment business and actually being inclined to vote for President Bush, how do you feel about that... that image of Hollywood as being liberal?
It's not an image. They're all liberal. I mean, it's outrageous how liberal it really is. I mean, it's completely liberal. But, I mean, it's not a conspiracy, but they are all liberal, and all TV shows have a liberal bent. And then when something like Fox News comes along, they all get outraged, like, how could they, Fox News, you know, and it's like, hey, it's the one thing that's not liberal. I mean, you know, it's fine. They're allowed to be liberal, but they are liberal. They can't deny Hollywood is liberal. And what bothers me about it is the fact that when they talk about these corporations and exploitation in the Middle East leading to this kind of stuff, they're pretending that they're not part of that with their cultural imperialism that goes all over the world and also infuriates Islamic and fundamentalist type people, and they're making money off it too. So it's not just oil, it's Hollywood and everything else. So I just don't like when people try to exclude themselves like they're, because they're not these stiff oil guys. They think, yeah, we're part of something. They're playing both sides against, you know what I mean? And I just don't like that.
So do you feel like you're in an embattled minority group as someone who's voting for Bush, but in show business?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I don't feel as embattled. I mean, you know, I don't know that that people really care. I mean, you know, show business people are relatively open. Most of the people I know, which is kind of, I feel like it's bad on them, they're just shocked that I could be for Bush. And they look at me like I'm from a foreign planet. Like they really look at you like, what's going on with him? Has he cracked up? Is he insane? Like, you know what I mean? So it is kind of interesting to see the reaction. It's more one of pity. It's like talking to some friend of yours who went crazy. You know? Is he a Christian? You know? And it's like, I'm none of these things, you know? But it's like, they just can't believe it. They're horrified, and they can't believe it. But they're not even horrified or mad at me. They're just like, wow, you know? That guy went crazy. And it's like, I just feel like if you're a comedian, you should see both sides are hypocritical, and both sides are, you know, obviously from history, Democrats or Republicans, society only changes as much as it changes. Neither one of them has that much to do with the economy changing. And, you know, it's like it just bothers me when anybody gets righteous, you know.
How did your family vote when you were young?
Democrats all the way. I'm a registered Democrat.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, well, at least I was. I think I still am.
I'll have to look at my thing, but I've been a registered Democrat my whole life, but I've been voting Republican. I voted for Giuliani, you know.
So what's behind the shift then? If you usually vote Democratic, what's behind the shift to voting Republican in this election?
Well, I maybe it's because, you know, I like to, you know, I just like to mix it up a little bit. I don't like to, I mean, it's not like I'm some hardcore Republican down the line, so it's kind of, it's hard for me to say, I'm voting Republican because they stand for what I stand for, you know what I mean? But it's just that the Democrats, I just feel like, I get a lot of it has to do, and I hate to steal Dennis Miller's life and his opinions, but that's what I'm going to do right now. A lot of it had to do with Giuliani. When Giuliani was in charge of the city, I had to deal with all these people moving, you know, into New York from wherever they're from and getting outraged over police brutality, and meanwhile the amount of brutality complaints and the amount of deaths by police were down like so much more than they were under Dinkins. Yet the perception was Giuliani's a Nazi, and I saw all these people walking around saying he's dividing the city, like the racial divide had something to do with him and not the history of the country. And so I guess that kind of made me, that made me pretty angry, I have to admit. And it made me even angry when Dennis Miller said it first. But I mean, but that did make me think, wow, you know, like, it just goes to show both sides have their own little, you know, hypocrite. And then I watched people get outraged. If I said I like Giuliani, they were like, what? I was like, he's done a lot of good, more than most politicians, you know. No, and they're like, he's a power man, and they give these vague ideas about how he's repressing New York, and it was like, you know, I don't know. That just that kind of threw me for a big loop, I think.
So, if we were to poll the comedy community, as it were, how do you think the poll would come out?
As far as liberal conservative?
Yeah, as far as this election.
Probably, I would say probably the white and black would be different. If you poll the white comedians, probably 90% of them would be anti-Bush, and 10% would be pro-Bush. And if you poll the black comedians, they probably all say, oh, either way, you know, it's going to be white people doing their thing, you know what I mean? Like, most of the black comedians I hang out with seem to be, you know, of the mindset that, well, this is business as usual, you know.
Well, Colin Quinn, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Colin Quinn is the host of Tough Crowd, which is shown on Comedy Central Monday through Thursday nights after The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, Jessica Chu, and Megan Howell. I'm Terry Gross. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, by the German Information Center, the shortcut to Germany on the web at www.german.info, and from Nonsuch Records, featuring Hymns of the 49th Parallel, the new album by Katie Lang. A tribute to Canadian songwriters Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, and five others, it's available at Barnes & Noble music locations. This is NPR, National Public Radio. On the next Fresh Air, retired Army General Tommy Franks. He was Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Central Command from July 2000 to July 2003 and led the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. He has a new memoir called American Soldier. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.